Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hey gang, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is great to have you company for another episode of the show. Now, recently, I had the opportunity to catch up with Greg Page, the original Yellow Wiggle, and I'd interviewed Greg on the podcast a little while ago, and he was telling me about his heart attack that he'd had. And many of you would have heard that story where he was performing with the original Wiggles, walked off stage and collapsed. Now, thankfully for Greg, there was a defibrillator on site, and on top of that, there was a nurse who could, you know, apply the defibrillator and help him with the resuscitation there. That defibrillator and that nurse no doubt saved Greg's life, and we know that early defibrillation is a predictor for survival of a cardiac event. So what Greg has been on a mission to do since then is to make sure that everyone has access to a defibrillator should they suffer a cardiac emergency. And to do that, he's created an app called Heart of the Nation, where he's looking to make sure that every defibrillator that's in circulation is registered so that it's both visible and accessible. The idea being that if someone goes into a cardiac arrest or has a heart attack, the rescuer can look up where the defibrillator is, send someone to grab it, and obviously use it and enhance the chance of survival for the patient. But here's the thing, he can't do this alone. There's so many defibrillators out there, there's no national register. And what we want to be able to do is have all these defibrillators networked so that in the event of an emergency, we know where to find it. I've felt that dentists are uniquely positioned to help in this endeavor because most of us have defibs in our practice. And that means there's a couple of defibrillators, you know, a couple of thousand, I should say, floating around the country. So what I'm going to ask of you is head across to heartofthenation.com.au/join and register your defibrillator. And all it does, all it takes, I should say, is a few moments to enter in a few details. And that just makes sure that if someone goes into cardiac arrest and your defibrillator is the nearest one, they can run in and grab it. And you know, it's just doing a good deed for the community. I think that this is something that as a community, we can all get behind, something we can all support. And I think getting a few extra defibrillators onto Greg's network, onto the app there, a few thousand, I should say, is going to make a difference to the lives of so many people. And I guarantee you that one of those defibrillators will be used to save lives. And what a good thing that is. What a good service that is for the person obviously receiving it, but what a good deed it is for us to feel like we're making a difference there. So please do head across to heartofthenation.com.au/join and register your defibrillator. Now, my guest today is Ingrid Maynard, and Ingrid has an incredible pedigree when it comes to sales. Ingrid started her career at the Body Shop. She learned all about how that worked from a retail environment. She was then invited to join the executive, travel to the UK, work over there for a period of time. And she's worked with lots and lots of businesses, helping them refine and develop their skills around sales. Now, in dentistry, we sometimes don't like the word sales. We use case acceptance or case presentation in lieu of it. But the truth of the matter is we've got to find a way to be able to offer our treatment in a way that's likely for it to be taken up. And so what we're going to talk about in this podcast is the difference between transactional selling versus relationship selling, how to get that right. What's the difference between active listening and clean language and the importance of using clean language as you speak? We're going to talk all about some of the misconceptions that go around selling and how to overcome them and why those misconceptions started in the first place. But what ultimately this podcast is designed to do is to give you not just the ability to reframe what selling might mean for you and your practice, but the skills and the knowledge and the tools to be able to take your case presentation, sales game, whatever you want to call it, to another level. So there's lots of really good information in this podcast from Ingrid. She's an absolute gem. If you want to find out more about her, head across to thesalesdoctor.com.au. So it's salesdr.com.au, and you can find out more about her information there. There's a ton of it there. It's good stuff, and I know you're going to enjoy this podcast as well. So without any further ado, here's Ingrid Maynard. Ingrid, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is fantastic to have you here. How's things down in Melbourne town?
Oh, look, you know, the weather's amazing. You know, you can trust Melbourne to really turn the weather on, Jesse. Not.
Well, it does turn it on for 5 minutes and then it changes, right? That's Melbourne.
Yes.
Ingrid, you run a business called The Sales Doctor, and you've become very well known, really well accomplished, highly regarded in the sales space. I'm always curious to ask about people and how they find their way into their chosen career and path, because usually I find there's a backstory, usually there's some sort of turn of events or some sort of pearl of wisdom that's really interesting. I'm curious to ask about your path into sales training.
Yeah, it's really interesting actually, Jesse, because I am an introvert naturally. Yeah. And so when I started working for the body shop while I was at uni, it was my first real job that I really, really wanted. Mm. And I loved the company. You know, working in a store, you've got people coming at you, mm-hmm. and you've got to form relationships really quickly, work out what they want to, why they're there, how you're going to maximize the opportunity and convert it into a sale, and then get them to come back. And I really struggled with that. You know, I just felt like I was being pushy and that, you know, they just need to be left alone in the store. And then I had this fantastic manager called Angela Bontempo.
Well, that's a good name.
She was amazing. She really changed the way that I saw everything, particularly sales. And she started to plant those seeds within me that was really about connecting with another individual, with about asking questions, about listening deeply, and that they're in there for a reason, Ingrid. They haven't just wandered in not aware of what it is that we do. They're there for a reason, and your job is to find out what that reason is and to help them to the best of your ability. They're seeking advice, and that's what you're there to give them. And they do want to buy. Like they're not there for, you know, and then going to be surprised when you take them over to the register. It's just not going to happen. And that started for me to really change the way that I saw selling. And then the second thing was that just through repetition, I was able to build the skill set around that, which was having conversations with complete strangers about finding things in common, about, you know, asking questions, but being genuine about asking those questions because I was naturally curious about the other person.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I'm an introvert too. And we were talking off air and I had my sales training, learning Amway and doing door-to-door stuff, which is, you know, kind of an introvert's worst nightmare in some senses. There's a perspective, though, that salespeople are naturally extroverted, that they're somehow gregarious, and therefore if I'm an introvert, I couldn't possibly do it. And I just wanted to ask you a bit about the different personalities, because there'll be people listening to this and go, oh, Ingrid, you're not really an introvert. I mean, you couldn't be really and have survived so long in this industry. So I'm just wondering, can we just talk about the different types of people that you've come across in your sales career, whether introverts, extroverts, everything in between, and whether it applies to anyone?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I actually think some of the best salespeople I've ever met have been introverts. Mm. And the reason for that is because they tend to be great listeners. And they're there not necessarily to put themselves forward, but they're often there to show up and to receive information from another person. And that, you know, in my world means that they tend to be great listeners, and they're good at internalizing the information that they get, and then they're able to put together a thoughtful response. They come across as somebody that you can trust more easily. Now, that doesn't mean that extroverts are terrible salespeople at all, but what I think the unfortunate thing is, there's been this myth around selling for the longest time that says that in order to be good at selling, you've got to be able to sell ice to the Eskimos, talk underwater, have the gift of the gab, be gregarious, and your skill set is really about, you know, convincing people to buy something that they had no intention of buying in the first place, or persuading them, being pushy, all of those things that we've now associated with all of the stuff that we reject. We don't want to be any way near close to that kind of association. And unfortunately, it couldn't be further from the truth. And so when we look at the people that find themselves in a sales career, they're just like anyone else. There's introverts, there's extroverts, there's people that, you know, are really all about relationships. There's other people that are more concerned about process and data and facts. And all of those people, if they have the skill set to adjust to the other person, can be fantastic salespeople. It's less about who they are naturally and more about their ability to find a way of adjusting the way that they communicate to the other and being of service to them. That's been my experience. So it doesn't really matter about introvert, extrovert. It's really about how they are able to adjust themselves to meet the other person where they're at.
And if that's the case, you would have to think that dentists would be uniquely positioned in some senses to be really good at sales, because when someone comes and sits in your dental chair, there's all the, you know, past hurts, past experiences, past whatever. So we find that when people sit in the dental chair, we have a whole, again, a range of people. Some are really happy and okay to be there. Others have had, you know, deeply traumatic experiences and they don't want to be there. But the role of the dentist is to find a way in, is to be able to create that relationship, to be able to connect with them. And I think what I'm hearing, if I've understood it correctly, is it's that connection piece and being able to be flexible in your communication style and adjust with what's in front of you. You know, you might have a different person from one appointment to the next, but being able to adjust your style to suit that person is going to be a really useful skill when it comes to selling. Is that fair?
Yes, spot on, Jesse. Absolutely. Yep.
When you were talking about the previous misconceptions about selling and people who do sell, you know, you've got to have the gift of the gab, talk underwater, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I kind of can't help but wonder if that's what's led to some people having a bit of an aversion to the word selling or thinking that selling is somehow a dirty word, which I know is a phrase that you've come across many times, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I wondered, where do you think this aversion started? And if we're to kind of get clear about selling and what it is and what it isn't, I'm wondering if we can kind of get some clarity about a definition. I think you touched on it before about helping people and all the rest of it, but where did the misconception start?
Yeah, I think some of those stereotypes have been perpetuated in, you know, ads and movies and, you know, Glengarry Glen Ross and, you know, Biff Loman, Death of a Salesman.
Yeah.
You know, and rarely do we see salespeople as being someone to, you know, that we want to aspire to be or that they're heroes. And yet in the 80s, there was a suite of speakers that emerged, Zig Ziglar, Jim Rohn.
Yep.
Jim Rohn was actually the first person I ever went to see as a speaker.
Oh, wow. I didn't get to see Jim.
Oh my gosh. Wow. It was a treat. And he's still one of the people that I really hold up as somebody with just that pragmatic wisdom, you know, those little pearls. But, yeah, he was Tony Robbins' first mentor. And for me, they came out of being salespeople. So these were people who didn't have college educations, who rose through the ranks and became independently wealthy many times over, and then decided and through selling in their industries and then decided to share that wisdom with other people. And so they were kind of the first speakers. Those were the people that I looked up to because I saw that they had so much wisdom to give and that it was actually a pathway. Well, for me, what I heard when I heard them speak was that selling is a pathway to personal development. Mm. And by enriching ourselves as human beings around the connection skills, the communication skills, the influencing skills, leadership skills, directional, you know, the ability to direct other people's thinking and the ability to really be truly be of service to another human being. That was something that I heard them talk about, and that was something that I wanted to be a part of. And then to add to that, there was a group when I was starting out, and I was at the body shop at this time, and it was called salespeople, it would be called today, yes. Salespeople with a Purpose, and it was called SWAP. And it was created during the recession we had to have.
Mm-hmm.
They used to drive around in the early 90s with these bumper stickers on their cars saying, you know, I do not participate in this recession. And I used to think, what do they mean by that? How can they not participate in a recession? It's happening to everyone, right?
Yeah.
how can you not participate in a recession? But what I heard when I went along to these breakfasts was it was a group of salespeople from a particular region. They'd come together once a week, and it was almost like they plug into this power source with one another energetically.
Yep.
And they would have a person up the front who would chair the meeting. They'd have breakfast together, and they would get together and they go, "I'm alive and well, and I feel great." And I remember thinking, "Oh, you know, gosh, isn't that cheesy? It's so American." Oh, you know, but there was something in that room that I felt. It was palpable. It was positive. Mm-hmm. And what I got from that was, and this was the first time I heard it, was that I can actually create my own economy mm-hmm. by the way that I think, the way that I operate within myself, the way that I operate within my practice of selling or in my business, and I can create and determine my own outcomes. That was a complete paradigm shift for me, and it continued to be throughout my career. But those were the seeds that were planted for me. So I feel quite fortunate in that I had these really positive role models of what great salespeople were actually all about. The unfortunate thing is that that has been the opposite, you know, that Glenn Ross, that, you know, Biff Lyman type, that car salesman, the real estate types who really are quite ruthless. They only, you know, they're transactional, they just want your money. That kind of stereotype, I think, unfortunately, has been perpetuated. And then a lot of businesses stopped investing in their salespeople, left them to their own devices. And I think we're paying the price for that today.
You spoke about the swap, salespeople with a purpose, right, and not participating in the recession. And it reminded me, I told you I learned my selling with Amway. One of my mentors in that environment was, there's a video of him online about it saying, "I believe I impact the economy. I'm not going to let the economy impact me." Words to that effect, right? And when what I'm hearing you say is that ability to take charge of your own personal circumstances, the ability to carve out your own destiny, irrespective of what's happening in the broader environment. Now, I think this is really pertinent today. Because I suspect whether we're in a recession or not in a recession, I'm old enough to remember the recession we had to have as well. But it doesn't mean we have to have it, right? It doesn't mean that everyone has to have it. And I guess my encouragement for anyone listening is if you're feeling like the economic tide is turning, that doesn't mean it has to affect you. So what I wanted to just explore in that thread there is, what's the mindset you adopt? What are the practices you adopt? How do you kind of approach that without being, you know, in the 1990s when we had that recession, it was everywhere. Like all you had to do is open the news, the papers, whatever else. It was kind of everywhere. Yes. How do you turn that off and just focus on what you got
to
do?
Yeah, well, I do think you do have to turn it off.
Yeah.
Actually, you do have to turn off the telly and not be the curator at the gateway of your mind.
Yeah.
And only allow the things in that you choose to absorb. I mean, I think that's people that have been on diets, you know, we're fastidious about what we put into our bodies, but we've got to be just as fastidious as what we take on board in our minds. And I used to be one of those news junkies who, you know, unless I was watching 10 different versions of the news and reading all of the papers, you know, I'd subscribe to them all and get them all on my daily feed. Until I just reached a point of saturation where I thought, I don't know where my own mind and thinking begins and ends. And there's no way that I'm not going to know what's happening in the world by not subscribing to those things and not watching the television. So I'd say if that's stressing you, turn it off and then fill your mind with things that are going to be enriching, educational, and uplifting. Not so that you can be a Pollyanna and deny reality, but so that you can make sure that whatever comes your way, you can respond to from a perspective of abundance and being filled. Mm. It's really about the things that you can control and focusing on those actions. There is nothing about selling that is a mind game only. There's a lot that we can influence about the way that we show up when we're in front of another person through the way that we think, of course. But selling is an action-focused activity. And so if we're going to be successful in this current situation, it is challenging. And when households are being put under pressure, they have to make different decisions about how they're going to spend their household budget. Mm. Absolutely, that makes sense. And, you know, there's a lot of people probably listening to this that will be going, well, yeah, that's me too. Well, of course, you know, that's practical and that's real. That said, that doesn't mean that they're not going to spend their money at all. Mm. We're certainly nowhere near the 1990s right now.
No.
And there is money around. It's about our ability to be able to create what it is that we do and making sure that that's relevant and meaningful for the people that are utilizing our services. And when there's a marriage between the two, then that's where we know that we're in the right place. And it's up to us to develop the skill sets to be able to take advantage of what actually is there, because there will be money there.
Yeah.
But it does mean that we can't be order takers and just be hoping for the best and crossing our fingers, putting the shingle out of the door and, you know, advertising, having a website, and assuming that that's going to be sufficient. It's going to come down to the way that we make people feel, the way that we make our, you know, when people come into our practices, how valued they feel, how relevant the service that we're providing is, and how they see that it's relating to some of their highest priorities in their own life, that we're connecting the dots for the clients who are coming in to see us and spend their money with us and making them really glad that they did. Mm. And they're skills that we can learn.
I really love that. You spoke about moving away from being an order taker, moving away from that transactional approach. And you also spoke about skills. And what I love about skills, the skills can be learned, right? It's not like people are born salespeople, just that there's a process and a skill. So could you just address what skills or what processes might be appropriate for someone to consider and think about if they're going, you know what, I accept that I want to get out on the front foot of this. I accept I want to create my own economy. I accept I can take charge of that. And I also accept that I've got some skills to develop and some knowledge to acquire.
Yeah.
Where do they start? What's the process? What's the skills?
There's a lot of skills, actually. And this is what I love about selling. And this is what I think. Having your own business and being in sales are two of the best ways to develop yourself personally. Mm. You know, it's an ongoing and never-ending series of discoveries, in my opinion. Mm. There's quite a number of skills. One of the most fundamental skills is the ability to be curious. Mm. And that is something that's not just a natural ability, but that's something that we can acquire. And the skill associated with curiosity is the ability to ask questions that are unexpected and that are incredibly relevant to the environment that you're in, but make somebody stop and think. And in the asking of a question, that person feels like, I'm interested in, you know, that person's interested in me. They want to find out about me. They care about me beyond just why I'm here. They want to know about my life. They want to know about my family. They want to know about my business. They want to understand me. They want to develop a relationship with me. Then out of that, I think, is the ability to truly listen. And there are listening skills that I teach. People often think about active listening as a skill. And I know that that's been what we've been fed for maybe 30 years, that, you know, that's the best way to listen. I'm not saying it's not, but it is one of those skills that we have to do some mental gymnastics with in order to do that type of listening well. And that is, we listen to what someone's saying, we put it into our own words, and then we reverberate that out. We kind of feed that back out. The problem with that is that can often create a disconnect between one person and the other person. Okay. So I teach a skill called clean language.
Okay.
Is when you're listening to somebody, you're listening for key words and phrases that person says, and then you're repeating the words back to that person in a natural way. So, for example, if somebody said to me, you know, like if you said to me, oh, you know, how's the weather in Melbourne today? And I said, oh, you know, well, it's cloudy and grey. And then you said, oh, that sounds terrible. It's not wrong.
No.
That's not clean language as opposed to, oh, cloudy and grey. Look, I can really relate. It's a little bit cloudy and grey here in Canberra too. What I'm hearing is, I'm not even conscious of this, but I hear you, Jesse, saying the same words back to me, and I go, he understands me, we're on the same page, he's listened to what I've said. When we say certain words, we have emotion and meaning attached to them. Mm. Just the act of taking some of those words, not parroting, no, not using all of those words, but just some key words and feeding that back to somebody means that person, you don't even have to understand what emotion and meaning that person has attached to them, but it connects to somebody in a way that is so simple, and it gets us on the same page much faster than even, you know, matching and mirroring and doing the rapport building and all of those other things that we've been taught, you know, at some point, either in our sales career or in a leadership journey, whether it be DISC or, you know, visual, auditory, kinesthetic, all of that stuff, which is great. But clean language kind of transcends and cuts through a lot of that stuff, and it enables us to get on the same page much faster and in a much simpler way.
I really appreciate that, because one of the things I have found, again, you're going through my own sales training and watching others and listening to others as well, is sometimes I've felt that it became like almost like a verbal jujitsu. Like, you know, it became...
Yes.
Complex.
Yes.
And I'm having this internal monologue as I'm remembering, okay, now do this. And there's there's all of that going on internally before it comes out of my mouth. And what I appreciate about clean language is it sounds simpler. It sounds like it achieves a great outcome in terms of that connection and understanding. But I then don't have a whole tape I've got to run before I can use it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It enables us to be present, because if we're going to use clean language as a skill, it forces us to actually listen in a different way as well. So instead of listening in order for us to go, oh, I can't wait, I'm just waiting for a gap in the conversation where I can let the other person know how clever and interesting I am, I can actually, I'm totally there for the other person. It's almost like I've got an imaginary basket where I'm allowing that other person to put their experience or to tell me what matters to them into that basket. And I'm going to hold that space for that person. And then I'm just going to choose a couple of things out of that basket to play back to that person in a genuine way in order to make that connection. And then we're on the same page, and then we can go forward from that place. And from there, I'm then in a much better position to actually hear you at an emotional level, rather than thinking about, you know, what's in it for me? What can I get? How can I, you know, make the most of this situation? I'm genuinely there for you, and things start to unfold quite naturally in a very, very different way than they would if I was trying to be incredibly clever, like you said, you know, the mental jujitsu. That's such a great word, that mental jujitsu. That is absolutely what we want to avoid, because that's why people go, oh, you know, selling, oh, you know, it's all, no, it just feels right. It's also because they're frightened of the mental jujitsu that they think that they have to go through in order to be good at it, and they really don't. It's much simpler than that.
And I think that's the key, isn't it? Because when you're going through mental jujitsu, you're kind of thinking, why am I saying this? What's my ulterior motive here? Am I being of service? Like the clean language is of being of service, letting people put things into that basket. That's the relationship piece versus the how do I come up with a clever wordsmithing technique to be able to paint them into a corner where they feel like they can't say no kind of routine.
Exactly.
I want to just get clear. So really, as I understand it, what we're trying to do is to really understand the person that we're conversing with, understand what's important to them by paying attention to them using the clean language. Yes. At some point, we're going to talk about our range of services or products, depending on the environment we're in. But before we can really offer a range of services or a particular service, we've got to know what problem we're trying to solve, right? We've got to understand what it is that person, or in our case, patient, is looking for.
Yes.
What their outcome is in terms of what they're trying to achieve, what they're worried about or whatever it is, and therefore we can match our product offering to it. Is that essentially it in a nutshell?
Yeah, it really is. So recently I was asked by one of my clients, and I only have been dealing with their B2B team, yep. their business team. Yep. Recently, they asked me to do a presentation to their store network, and they were talking about it, what they called attachment selling.
Oh.
We want to focus on you know, increasing basket size. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be in you know, the dentist world. You know, okay, well, they've come in for a service. What else can we add on to that
yep.
service? Is it some product? Is it another service? You know, is it something else that we can provide?
Yeah.
But rather than just thinking about the thing, we need to go back a step. The first part is really about making sure that that person knows that they matter, mm. genuinely matter to you, because unless they know that and they feel comfortable, you're not going to get that opportunity. And frankly, we're not going to be able to hear what really matters or what outcome they're driving, what problem we're solving, unless we do that first. So that's the first part. Once we get to that, you know how we talked about meeting them where they're at and then taking them forward, then we need to, if we're curious, we need to really get to understand, you know, their reason for coming in, their reason for this particular service, what their health goals are and how our service fits in with their overall health picture.
Yeah.
And then from there, we can kind of get a better understanding of some of the drivers for that person. Is it aesthetic? Mm-hmm. Is it an aesthetic driver? Is it a genuine health driver? Is there something else that's happening in their life that they're concerned about that we need to be aware of in order to kind of steer the direction of how we can best service this particular person? Because the question that I need to be asking myself is, what is going to be have the maximum benefit for this person today with the service that they're being provided? Now, if we took this right back and out of dentistry for a moment and we said somebody's coming in for a haircut and I'm speaking to, well, I don't mean to be sexist here, but for a lot of women, we spend a lot of money on our hair.
Oh, yes. I have a wife and two daughters. I can attest to that.
Okay, right. So it would be like going to the hairdresser and spending, you know, a few hundred dollars on cuts, colours, treatments, etc., and then going to Coles and buying a $2.50 bottle of shampoo.
Yes.
It's an insane way to treat that, you know, to get the maximum benefit from that visit. And yet that's sometimes the way that we adopt that thinking in a dentist practice. So recently I went into my dentist and she identified a particular issue that I have that, you know, they need to address. Now they had some products there that day. Now, instead of saying to me, you need this type of brush, this type of toothpaste, you need to get some Pixtas, mm-hmm. you know, to get in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and these are the particular Pixtas. They said to me, look, you know, here's a couple of samples of the Pixtas, and which were real, like $1.50 a packet or something, you know, and you can get them from Safeway. And I actually thought that they were telling me that because they didn't sell them. Now, the problem that I've got is actually it's not going to go away without some significant care, and yet they didn't think, and this was not the dentist. This was the people at the front desk who were processing my payment,
yep.
booking my next visit, suggesting that I go for an X-ray, but not doing all of this other stuff. And because I'm not a dentist, and because clearly I'm not making the most of my oral care or oral hygiene, I don't know, and I don't know the questions to ask. I'm expecting them to give me that advice. And I tell you, if they'd given me that advice because they cared about me, they talked to me about how this can help in between visits, I'm going to spend that money because it's going to save me money down the track.
Yeah, and save you time from going to Safeway to get them, right? Because there's a convenience factor as well. Like, you're a busy woman. You know, do you really need another trip in your life?
That's right.
It's a little piece of me dies when I hear that story, but it's a common story.
It is.
There's a whole bunch of things that are happening in there. But what I want to ask about is, if it's not the dentist, and I get that this is happening at the reception counter.
Yeah.
What's happening with the receptionist that she's not not thought to offer that to you there and then? Is it a case of, and of course there's going to be lots of different possibilities here. Is it a case of just not aware of it, didn't think about it, or didn't cross my mind? Is it the fact that she didn't know what conversation had occurred in the surgery with the dentist, so there was no communication, there might have been a breakdown there?
Yeah.
Is it her own hang-ups about money and wanting to buy the cheapest thing at Safeway?
Yeah.
Where do you think, or is it some of all of the above, a bit of column A, B and C, or something else? What do you think's going on?
No, I absolutely agree with what you just said about column A, B and C. I think that there's a whole bundle of things going on there. So it was the dental hygienist who processed my payment. So she was there in the room, you know, at the computer doing the teeth with the, you know,
charting,
you know, as the dentist was cleaning my teeth, doing the clean. So she was across all of that. She knew that I was going for the X-ray. She came out with me. She was the one that offered me the sample of the pictures and so forth. So it wasn't a lack of communication, but I actually think that what could have been strengthened there is that authority principle, which is really key. So the authority in that room is the dentist. Now, if my dentist had said to her, now, before Ingrid goes, you've got to make sure that you show her the right toothbrush. You've got to recommend some toothpaste to her. Make sure she doesn't leave here without pixtures, because floss isn't going to cover what she's got going on. She really needs these particular types of pixtures, and she's not going to be able to find them anywhere except here. And we've got them. So let's make sure she goes home with the right products. So there could have been that. Then that would have taken away a lot of that onus on that dental hygienist to feel like she had to sell me or to do any of that kind of work. So I would have also, as the patient, gone, oh, well, the dentist said I needed to do that. So, and she's got my best interests at heart, which I would have hoped she would have, because she showed me all of these other products that I had to buy. So had she done that, then that would have taken greater onus to buy because of that authority. Second thing is, it would have taken the onus off the dental hygienist. Third, I'm more likely to go ahead with that because I would have made that initial commitment and I want to be consistent with that, which are a couple of those principles of influence.
Yeah.
So I would have gone away with that, and I would have actually felt like there's a complete service going on here. I'm not just coming in once or twice a year to get my teeth cleaned or a checkup or whatever, but these people, now that I'm getting older, unfortunately, really are starting to elevate their level of care for me and making it about what's best for me. And that's what I certainly think. But I think you're right about even though we've got them here, I'm not going to sell that to you, because seriously, it's not even about the amount of money, because the pixel, I went yesterday, I mucked up my appointment, but I went yesterday, and where are they? Here. Look.
Exhibit A, pixels.
I've got my pixels there. I just said, look, while I'm here, I'm going to get them, because I had some time and I was looking in the glass cabinet and I saw that they had them, because I haven't been able to find them anywhere else. And I bought them. They were $1.50 a pack. That's or nothing. Something insanely just cheap.
Yeah.
So I think in her mind, she was like, I don't want to be pushy. I don't want to do X. It's just wrong. Rather than thinking about what's best for Ingrid, the patient, how can I make it more convenient for her? And how can I get her to do everything here? She's already here. Let's at least let her just go home from here and start using it and getting the benefit.
100%. It's really interesting. The retail opportunity in a dental practice is often overlooked.
Yes.
Yeah, whether it's toothbrushes, toothpaste, pixers, or anything else, tooth mousse, all those sorts of things. I've got a client whose retail sales, I mean, they're not really kind of going hard at it by, to use that language, but they're generating $150,000 a year of revenue through retail sales.
Wow, okay.
And like that's a fair amount of toothbrushes and toothpaste and all that sort of stuff, right? But what it means, though, is they've adopted the approach, like you've just said, what's best for this particular patient and how can we support them better and save them time, save them hassle, save them everything. Now, $150,000, I can't remember the actual margin on it. Let's just call it 50%, or maybe even if it's a third. It's still $50,000 to the bottom line, right? That's that's not chump change, right? And so, and I know that we're not talking about money per se, but there is a good commercial outcome as well. And these little $1.50 picks to things that you might just kind of go, oh, that's suddenly $1.50. I can't be bothered selling it.
Yeah.
It adds up.
It does add up. It absolutely adds up. And you think a lot of those retail sales, you know, $150,000, if they're not even really that concerted about that effort, imagine how much more they could be selling if they set it up as well. So, for example, I'm thinking about this particular dentist of mine. If they framed it up and said, you know, so that you can get the most out of your visit today, we're going to make sure that you go home with a care pack.
Yeah.
Now, it will be a little bit extra, but it'll save you the hassle of having to go shopping around from different places to try to get that when we provide everything for you that we endorse, we recommend, we know it's tried and true, and we've got the best products here, you know, because we stand behind them.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to go, oh, okay. And then I'm waiting for that recommendation. They've already planted that seed in my mind. I'm waiting for it. I've got the fish lips on and I'm under the light. I've got the glasses on and I'm just waiting until the end for them to go, here's your care pack. This is what we recommend.
100%. It's just quite phenomenal that the opportunity there. You spoke about basket size a little while before. And, you know, I'm not suggesting you're going to increase the basket size by 10%, 20% just with retail sales, but a couple of percent here and there, it just compounds out across the year and it's good. And you're doing a service for the patient, you're taking a weight of, you know, responsibility off them. It's great. I wanted to ask a little bit about the intersection between marketing and sales.
Yes.
Where I'm going with this is you mentioned Cialdini's principles of influence just before. And they're wonderful. And I'm also keen on his work on persuasion as well.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you about creating the environment that's conducive to sales before they arrive. So I know that's a bit of a zigzag in our conversation, but I wondered if you had any quick thoughts on that.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Look, I absolutely love that. So I think there are a few things that people can do to make sure that they're maximizing the opportunity, you know, for somebody to sell. And some of that stuff is really, really basic. And that might be just, you know, like I know Cialdini talks about, you know, the person being in front of a florist as opposed to in front of maybe a car dealership and asking people out on dates. And it was the association with the florist that got the dates, even though the person, when they asked and said, you know, was the reason that you went out with this person when they asked you because he was standing in front of a florist? Of course not. No.
No.
It had nothing to do with it. It's not a conscious thing. So if we kind of transpose some of that persuasion psychology to a dental practice, just having products beautifully displayed and not just in a glass case like they're locked up and, you know, they're under lock and key and you can't get to them and maybe there's a bit of dust on the top and, you know, it's kind of protected and you've got to have special authority to go in and have a look at it. But if it was displayed in a way or packaged up in a way or communicated in a way or even said in a way way before we even get there, we're going to be much more open to the possibility that that's going to happen at some stage and be much more open as patients to taking those things on board. So, yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, okay. I feel like I could talk to you for 3 days. This is a really fascinating and interesting topic. I always love trying to understand why people do the things that they do.
Yes.
And it's all about the psychology. It's all about the emotional journey. It's all about those things. Ingrid, as I mentioned at the very outset, you are incredibly well-known for the training you do at Sales Doctor. And for anyone who has their pen and paper handy, you want to write this down, go to salesdoctor.com.au. So it's salesdr.com.au. And check out Ingrid's resources. There's a ton of stuff there. I've been noodling around there and busying myself on the website. And I'd really encourage you to get in touch with her if you want to elevate your sales. And particularly, which we didn't really talk about too much today, if you want to get your team on board with sales as well, whether it's your associates, your front desk, getting everyone speaking the same language, working to the same plan, I'd really encourage you to reach out to Ingrid and engage her services because her stuff is really good. Really good.
Thanks, Jesse.
Honestly, the stuff I've seen of yours, I've followed your work for quite some time now. It's good and it works and it's effective. And the thing I love about it is it's coming from a great place. It's coming from that place of service. So
very much so.
Yeah, and I think that's what dentists will really resonate with because we all got into healthcare because of the care word.
Right.
What I have noticed about what you talk about that's different to a lot of other people is the care. And I think there's a really nice resonance in that. So thank you for sharing all your wisdom today. You've been wonderful.
Oh, thanks so much, Jesse. Maybe you'll come back on my podcast.
Well, I'd love to. Anytime. Anytime for a chat because I've enjoyed our conversation. I always say, Ingrid, the most fun I have in my business is I have the opportunity to talk to interesting people about interesting stuff all the time, whether that's on podcasts, with clients. It's just great. And, you know, it's fun, it's interesting, and, yeah, so thank you. I'll take you up on that any day.
Excellent. All right, you're on. Thanks so much, Jesse, for having me.
Pleasure. Thanks, Ingrid. Cheers now.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.